There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Good evening, Tom Lacovara, Stewart, Resurrect Republic Truth Radio, with Eric the Freedom Streamer, and I think Chris and Gary are probably out there too. Tonight, I've been gone for a year. We've seen a lot of things going on all across campuses, all over the country. A lot of people are wondering, what in the heck is going on? Has everybody lost their cotton-picking minds? Now, on this show, we dig way past the current. But because I just came back, I want to start with the current, and then I'm going to rewind it back over the course of the next week or so, and we're going to go dig into the history of where this ideology, where this movement came from. It's called cultural Marxism, and don't believe the memes coming from the left that tells you that cultural Marxism is a conspiracy theory. The reason that they are so effective at pushing that lie is really because they don't. Most of them don't know that they're telling it. Most of them have no clue as to the origins of this ideology, or the machine that has put in place to drive this into destroying the fabric of Western society. On tonight's show, I'm going to share with you Catherine Mary Cady Pavlich's presentation. She's an American journalist, primarily known for her work on the online news magazines townhall.com and The Hill. National Review Washington Fellow, she's appeared numerous times as a television commentator, notably on Fox, on The Five. In this piece we're going to share with you, she talks about how feminism is linked to Marxism, and this is going to give you a taste of a little bit of what's going on around the college campuses. And I want you guys to do me a favor. If you have college students that are in school, if you're a college student yourself, if you have grandkids that are in college, do me a favor and send me an email if they would share with me some of the crazy social justice insanity that their instructors are teaching them. You can send that to Lacovara, L-A-C-O-V-A-R-A, at journalist.com. Please send me any information that you have that's affecting your families directly so that we can address it on the air. So let's get to it. Clip one, roll.
Marxist teaching is not a tiny fraction of the modern feminist agenda, and it's not a fringe movement either. It is its centerpiece. From the time of Karl Marx to the 1960s and up until today, the progressive women's rights movement has hardly been about women's rights at all, but instead about the transformation of American society and the transfer of wealth through government force. Women's rights have simply acted as a veil to distract away from the true intentions of progressive activists. The socialist revolution in America depended on two things: a breakdown of the family and women voting for progressives, both of which they have been very successful at doing. In their 1974 manifesto, Prairie Fire, The Politics of Revolution, Anti-Imperialism, Domestic Terrorists, Bill Ayers, and Bernadine Dorn, and the Weather Underground, devoted an entire chapter to how the women's rights movement should be used to advance revolutionary goals, calling feminists to join the ranks and their political agenda. They wrote, quote, "Sexism will not be destroyed until imperialism is overthrown. It is in the collective interests of women to do this and to take full part in building a socialist revolution. We need power. Socialist revolution lays the foundation for the liberation of women and begins dismantling the tenacious institutions of sexism." Now, there were only a few hundred copies of Prairie Fire that were produced, and the book has obviously been long out of print. Only the closest activists were privileged to see their blueprint plans for women moving forward in America and through the decades. But as the introduction to the manifesto states, it was written to communist-minded people. But more importantly, it was written to women's groups and laid the groundwork for a long-term takeover of the feminist movement. This analysis represents the beginning of a process, not its final conclusion, they wrote. So in this manifesto, Bill Ayers, who has close ties, obviously, to the president, even though nobody wants to talk about that, Bill Ayers gave women a set of tasks based on his realization of the power of an uprising of women could bring to the progressive cause. He said, quote, "Our goal is the development of feminism, which genuinely determines, safeguards, and defends the collective interests of women, and which points in the direction of revolution. We need to build a revolutionary feminism. Women are at the intersection of the crisis, of a crisis, and the will to survive." So they believed that men acted as male supremacists to women, and that in order to change society, a breakdown in the traditional family structure was necessary. And in order to destroy that structure, they portrayed women as victims inside of it. Quote, "The individual capitalist family structure is a wasteful social form and not healthy for children to grow up in. It's a trap for women. It is a sanctioned form for sexual exploitation and a hypocritical double standard. The family breeds competitiveness among us." You think the left hates competition? They do, even in your own family. "The family breeds competitiveness among us, allows no future for women to grow with children, demeans old women, separating them from the life of the community, and the ability of single mothers to work and raise and care for children and maintain a household is a monument to women's strength and determination. The modern male-run nuclear family, when we tear away the veil of sentimentality, is the basic unit of capitalist society. Capitalists and the modern family matured together historically, feeding off of each other's development." So you can see that they understood what capitalism was about and exactly the way that they needed to change it to implement their own progressive socialist policies. But the fact is, despite what the Weather Underground and their ilk want women to think about the so-called wasteful structure of the free market economy and the family, the embrace of the traditional family structure is one of the best things that's ever happened to women, and it has kept them out of poverty. It should be no surprise that according to a report from the United Nations Development Project, women living in anti-free market or socialist systems, especially in Eastern Europe, experience higher rates of poverty. And so the Prairie Fire Manifesto wasn't on the fringe of far-left policy positions. Its philosophies were deeply rooted in Marxist and socialist thoughts and prevalent throughout Marxist and socialist literature. Take, for example, Feminism and the Marxist Movement, another book that I picked up at the NOW conference, how winning the liberation of women is inseparably linked to the struggle of the working class to transform all economic and social relations, by Mary Alice Waters from 1972. Waters was the editor of the Marxist Journal of Politics and Theory and idolized mass murderer Che Guevara in her writings. In her work, Waters just details the role socialism played in stoking the 1960s revolutionary feminism, how the Socialist Workers' Party and Young Socialist Alliance promoted the idea of women's liberation being necessary to change the economic structure of the United States. Quote, "We threw ourselves into the movement to learn from it, to better understand it, to help lead it in an independent and fighting direction, and win the most conscious feminists to bring the most conscious feminists to an understanding that only a socialist revolution could provide the necessarily material foundations for the complete liberation of women." So they're saying in order for women to be liberated, you have to tear down a capitalist structure. At the same time, she wrote, we began the process of arming ourselves theoretically. We studied the relevant Marxist classics more deeply than before and tried to apply them to current reality. We grounded our practice and political orientation in the fundamentals of Marxism. And so Marx was a hero for Waters, who became a hero of the feminist movement. So someone she glorified and pointed out, she pointed out that he was right when it came to the so-called oppression of women inside the capitalist family structure. She lamented the idea that many women choose to stay home and be a wife and a mother, and acknowledged that the women's suffrage movement was not built on the idea of destroying capitalism, but that it was something that needed to be changed through the hijacking and renaming of the women's liberation movement after the 1960s. So one thing that people might not know is the women's suffrage movement was actually a conservative movement. It was conservatives who wanted women to have the right to vote. It was conservatives who pushed through legislation that allowed women to get the right to vote. It was the left that voted against getting women the right to vote. And it wasn't until later, when it came politically convenient, as Bill Ayers lined up in his manifesto and many others, that they hijacked the movement and have been getting credit for being pro-women ever since, much like they did with the civil rights movement. And so as socialists began to infiltrate and hijack the feminist movement, they began to create new organizations parading as women's rights groups with an underlying agenda of socialism and redistribution of wealth in America. The National Organization for Women was one of them. There are many more. So I know we've heard a lot about Marx, but we, I think, need to take a look at what exactly he said and go straight to the source on the issue. What did he say about women? Well, you can find it all in the Communist Manifesto, which is sold at your local socialist bookstore. No, it really can be found all in his Communist Manifesto, where he boldly states his goals of destroying the family and promoting single women in addition to dependence on an all-powerful state government. He wrote abolition of the family, saying that men claim to exploit their women in their families. On what foundation is the present family, the bourgeois family, based on capital, on private gain? It is completely developed from this family. This family exists only among the capitalists. But this state of things finds its complement in the practical absence of the family among the proletarians and in public institutions. So Marx believed that keeping women and children protected inside the family was exploitation. He also believed instead that they should be raised by and educated by the government. He said, do you charge us with wanting to stop the exploitation of children by their parents, as if keeping kids inside the family was exploitation? You'll see this a lot with the education system. Why is it that progressives want your kids to be at school from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and want to feed them three meals and have everything come through the state education system? He says, to this crime of wanting to destroy the family, we plead guilty. But you will say we destroy the most hallowed of relations when we replace home education by the social state. Social studies, ring a bell, anyone? But what Marx failed to mention about women was how his goals would leave more women in poverty along with their children. And so, in closing, there are just a few questions that we can ask in the modern era that are based of the feminist movement and of the left that claims to be pro-woman in the modern era of Barack Obama. There's a few questions that we can ask that destroy this bogus idea that the left is where women belong. You know, if liberals really believe that strong, independent women can protect themselves, then why do they oppose the right to keep and carry a firearm for self-defense? What, you know, if Barack Obama is the most pro-woman president in American history, as many far-left feminist groups have classified him, then why does he seek to make women more dependent on the government and dependent on the government for everything that they have? You'll remember during the 2012 presidential campaign, the Obama campaign produced this Life of Julia slideshow. And, you know, I always like to hold the left accountable up to their own standards, as if they have any, but to their own standards and statements. And they're constantly screaming about sexism, right? And this Life of Julia slideshow portrayed this young woman who's born, and then she dies, and her entire life she is dependent on the government for everything from her food, her education, her housing, raising her child without a father, everything. But where was the life of John? Why is it that the left only thought that it was women who should be raised by the state, that they were the weaker of the genders, that there is no way that they could survive any time in their life without a government handout, without the government holding their hand? On that issue, of course, this was included in the life of Julia. If the right to an abortion gives women personal autonomy and sexual freedom, then why are its debilitating after effects conveniently ignored? We often hear this accusation that conservatives are against women's health. Well, if conservatives are against women's health, then why is it that conservatives want women to know all of their options and all of the information before they go in to have that procedure? It's the left who is constantly trying to keep information out of the hands of women on very serious lifelong decisions that they make in those medical areas. And finally, if conservatives are so insensitive to women, then why is it that the sexual lechery of Ted Kennedy and Bill Clinton has been ignored or covered up for years? You know, the left has been lying to women and all of us for decades, and they've successfully rewritten history. The left talks about women in one way, in reality, and treats them, or they talk about them in one way, but in reality, treats them very differently. And the left has been selling victimhood as empowerment for decades. I know that I'm sick and tired as a woman of being defined by the pills that I take and being defined by lady parts or body parts or as a victim of my gender. And I'm sure that a lot of the women in this room are too, and I'm sure that the men are tired of being accused of hating women simply because you want them to pay their own bills, which once upon a time was an empowering thing to do. The bottom line is that women succeed through opportunity, free markets, and hard work, not through dependence on the government or through socialist policies. And we all succeed in this way. The place to push back against this classification of women, the sexist classification of women by the pills that they take, is on college campuses. And it's important for Young America's Foundation to continue that fight.
I have to probably be driving my wife nuts in the year that I was, not this year that I was away, but before that. Because what I was doing, I would devote a section of time out of my day, as much as it felt like lost time, it wasn't. It was really studying the effects of ideological subversion at the universities and college campuses where they're pumping out so-called educated people who are nothing more than little entitled snowflakes that think that they deserve a safe space and not to have their ideas challenged. They like to be able to self-identify as to whatever they want. And while it had to be annoying, there was a reason for it. We are almost in a completely overrun. That's a fact. We can see nations like Australia. I was speaking with a couple more of my friends today from Australia and one from New Zealand again I reached out to. They're in a world of hurt because of this. In Canada, you can actually go to jail for your beliefs and expressing them. For instance, we all know about the you know, free speech doesn't protect popular speech. Popular speech needs no protection. So if you deny the Holocaust or if you misgender somebody by not using the proper pronouns, this is not distraction. This is the effect of neo-Marxist postmodernism cultural Marxist ideology. And if you have out there listening tonight, if you have kids or grandkids in university, or even local community colleges, high schools, grade schools. What they're doing in New Zealand is pushing a brand of sex education that is so pornographic that it would make your mind numb to even try and wrap your head around it. I think that the only reason that they have not been able to achieve these goals here quite that far is because you have people that are well-armed and well-entrenched into their belief system of a moral compass. But this is eroding fast, and with each generation, it gets worse and worse. This is the effect of this ideology. Now, in the future, we're going to be talking about, we're going to be taking it back beyond Marx. We did just the other night, just a little bit, but for people to understand what we're talking about, we just can't use some buzzwords and tell them what these things are and then jump right to 200 years ago. We need to really take them back and make them realize what's going on. You hear on Fox News, even this young lady, as bright as she is and as wonderful as that presentation, she's a research fellow for the National Review. Well, a lot of people don't understand that the National Review was a neoconservative funded, partially funded by the CIA. There's some evidence to that. And this was Crystal, who was a leftist, who was disillusioned with the more liberal left, and he was a Trotskyite, and he shifted to the right. And he's the one that started the National Review. This is where we have the big war, big government, rhino Republicans. That's the neocon base. Their basis of their ideology is not, it's not the conservatism that many of us believe that it is. The support for getting behind other nations that bring us to war all over the Middle East. The idea that anytime we stand opposed to something, it's a phobia. We're afraid of it because we don't want to shed our American cultural identity. That means that we're afraid. No, it's not. Doesn't mean that we're afraid. It doesn't mean we just means that we don't want to. It's that simple. I'm not afraid of Islamic jihadists. I'm not afraid of Marxists. In fact, quite the opposite. These are useful idiots that are so disorganized, and thank God pushing a no guns message, because half of them probably couldn't hit the broadside of a barn shooting sideways. These are going to be the useful idiots that bring on a totalitarian cause, a totalitarian need. This is where all of the Nazi talk comes from. Trump's a Nazi. Well, they know what they're doing. These people have known for a very long time, and they know that by pushing this movement, they are going to bring about upon them eventually a backlash that is going to cause the disintegration of any left, any freedom that's left out there. That's where you get your martial law. That's where you get your internment camps. All of this stuff that happened, it's history repeating itself over and over and over again. We saw it in Germany. We saw it in Russia. We saw it in China. We saw it in Cambodia. We saw it in Paraguay, Venezuela. I mean, it's happened over and over and over and over again. Yet these people will not engage you in a common sense discussion. You can't really try and change their mind because they've been programmed by these social studies courses. I remember when I was in high school taking social studies, and I didn't know then why I couldn't get a good grade in social studies, because most of the time I was arguing with my teacher. Because everything that I had been taught growing up, the traditional family, the moral code, all of that, the things that good parents in a family teach you, is what these indoctrination centers seek to unravel. The destruction of the family. It's insane. So, what do we do? Where do we go from here? It's some people say that it's already too far gone. I don't know. I say it's not. I say that we can fight back, because they are so now getting so ridiculous that you can see the internet, YouTube, social media, they're canceling out many of our voices quicker, or not as quick as we keep flooding in. If you look at some of these posts that they write, the Southern Poverty Law Center, I think, covered cultural Marxism, 9 years ago? They haven't wanted to touch that subject again. I remember calling the Southern Poverty Law Center and challenging Mark Potok to a civilized debate on the facts. Well, of course, he's not going to come on the air and do any such thing. They're pretty well funded, though, with this propaganda. Well, anyway, I know that, Chris has his ideas on this subject pretty well. I haven't gotten a chance really to speak with Eric in a while about it, but I'd like you guys to weigh in a little bit if you would.
I will right now because you just kind of tweaked three things and I've lumped them all together, and it was I wasn't sure if I was going to bring it up because I didn't want to sound like a broken record.
But ah, do
when
it.
When you said you're not afraid of the Muslim thing, and that just I'm going to tell you what I'm going to combine what you were just talking about with cultural Marxism, the Jesuits, which we've been talking about for the past few nights, and Islam. McQuaid Jesuit High School in Rochester, New York. I went to
a year
or two, and and it says McQuaid Jesuit High School. Gary in Michigan couldn't believe it. He said, "Can you send me a picture of that?" Yeah, they actually have out in the open a Jesuit high school here.
This sure.
Where they breed the little zits. Okay, so the Jesuit zits have their own high school, and they took without notifying. This is a private Catholic school. It cost a few bucks. And my parents were kind enough to try to look out for my best interest and think that I was getting a good kid. God bless them for sending me there, you know, but we won't, you know, it's the Jesuits, okay?
They didn't know any better. They didn't know.
They didn't know any better. God bless them. They were really, they said, hey, you know, we just got a few extra bucks here. Would you like to go to a private school and get a good education, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, I said, sure, sounds good. You know, and it was just another, to me, I, you know, wasn't on the in crowd, so it was just another, you know, nightmarish communist Nazi school at the time, and they ran it that way. And the priests were a bunch of drunks, and, you know, and they were drinking with the students in the back room. You know, none of them over 18. They, without notifying the parents, okay, the parents who pay big bucks for sending their kids to this school, took these students on a mandatory forced field trip to a local mosque to gain an appreciation for Islam. And I thought, and boy, if the parents weren't up in arms and flipping out, they should have been. But when I heard this, I just had to kind of get a grin a little bit and say, boy, you know, that's no surprise. Not even
right.
Parents not getting permission. You know,
this is all planned.
That's what the Catholics do. Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Well, it's what the Jesuits do. I was a Catholic, and I didn't do this stuff, right? I don't like to. I want to be real careful here for our listening audience to understand when we're talking about these power structures. We're discussing the power structures. We're not talking about. There's so many. There's thousands and thousands of Catholics out there that are good-hearted people. They're in a system, just like most Americans are in this system of indoctrination by cultural Marxism in the schools. This is how it happens. They've known this for a very long time. Schools are where it's at.
They're the ones who spread the communism and the Marxism to these. I hate to use the word third world countries because a lot of people don't like that description. But just for lack of a better word. That one right there.
And dare I say Wahhabism, too.
Exactly. And you know, no surprise that without notification of the permission. I mean, I'm sure a lot of parents didn't really care for having their children who they thought they were sending to a, you know, Christian type of place back up. And you could be betrayed by the staff administrators. Yep. And, you know, I just thought that was absolutely ridiculous, Tom, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's ridiculous. And when I say, when the audience hears me say, I'm not afraid of of Islam, what I'm not afraid of, okay, me, myself, I'm not afraid of Muslims. I am far more afraid of this power menagerie that is pushing the clash of civilizations against each other. That is what we need to fear. We'll be back after a few words from our sponsors, Resurrect the Republic, Eric the Freedom Screamer, on RBN.
The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Broadcast. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're sitting in with Tom tonight. Tom may have gotten called away just for a second, so we're going to, hopefully he's going to come back here. That was a great clip he played about the social Marxism and how it overlaps into feminism and Islam and how the Vatican, which are the executioners for the Zionists, are absolutely pushing this cultural Marxism, especially in this more impoverished countries, the smaller, less countries less able to defend themselves against the United States military machine and its intelligence agency handlers and its economic hitmen, who basically approach the newly elected leaders of these small countries and say, you're going to do business with these 20 corporations or else. Read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. Tom, if you're back yet, just chime right in, okay?
Yeah.
Tom?
Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah, by John Perkins. Yeah, he was what's called an economic, the colloquial is Economic Hitman, it's called, but their actual titles are usually Deputy Director of Economic Policy for the State Department. And that's right. The disguise they come in and they present the leaders. And his book is very interesting. We should have him on as a guest if he's still available. And he presents the whole scenario about how
The leaders of these countries are presented with a list of corporations that they will do business with, or else, and the or else is basically either the Marines get sent in on some bogus, you know, there's a communist insurgency there, we have to send in the military, or they do an assassination from what's called a jackal, which is nothing but a hitman, i.e. Carlos the Jackal, who was a real international hitman, and you can look into his history, his sordid history. But that's what they do. They either have the Marines come in or they use jackals to assassinate. And he named the leaders that got assassinated by the CIA. And that's nothing more than what they are, economic hitman for the CIA at the behest of the bankers who own the multinational corporations. And they threaten these smaller countries into submission. Most of them end up caving in because they get bribed with this. They're either like, hey, you take a couple $100 million and live like a king, or else, you know, you go down. And, you know, it's very sad. And this is why everybody has to wake up and realize this empire that we're living in is at the expense of innocent people worldwide. And it's just not a just and godly thing to be pursuing as a society, as a fictitious entity. I'm going to turn it over to you guys and take about a 10-minute break. Tom and Chris, go ahead. And Gary.
There you are.
I was just going to suggest if John Perkins was the economic hitman, then George Soros is the financial terrorist of the world.
Isn't that a fact? Well, you know, people have said to me, and I hear this all the time, we have nobody to blame but ourselves. Well, it's not really exactly true, because we've been under a form of ideological subversion, and we've been under this now for quite a while. I know that you're familiar with the ex-KGB or alleged ex-KGB, Yuri Brezhmanov. Like I said, my audience out there that already knows about him, that I've already shared with them, they're going to have to forgive me. I'm going to share a clip of Yuri Brezhmanov talking about this very thing that we see on campus is going on right now, and this absolute takeover of Western society. So I'd like to run that clip when you get a chance there, Mike.
Well, you spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion, and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see. Most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And yet these people who've been programmed and, as you say, in place, and yes, who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept, mm-hmm, these are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, mm-hmm, dissidents. Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. This they don't understand, and it will be the greatest shock for them, of course. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization. So basically America is stuck with demoralization, and unless, even if you start right now, here, this minute, you start educating new generation of Americans, it will still take you 15 to 20 years to turn the tide of ideological perception of reality back to normalcy and patriotism. The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, it doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, it's what matters is essentials. Economy, foreign relations, defense systems. And you can see it quite clearly that in some areas, in such sensitive areas as defense and economy, the influence of Marxist-Leninist ideas in the United States is absolutely fantastic. I could never believe it 14 years ago when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely. Normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 68, Comrade Brezhnev said, now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized. This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., with the benevolent dictators like Walter Mondale, who will promise lots of things, never mind whether the promises are fulfillable or not. He will go to Moscow to kiss the bottoms of new generation of Soviet assassins, never mind. He will create false illusions that the situation is under control. Situation is not under control. Situation is disgustingly out of control. Most of the American politicians, media and educational system trains another generation of people who think they are living at a peacetime. False. The United States is in a state of war, undeclared total war against the basic principles and the foundations of this system. And the initiator of this war is not Comrade Andropov, of course. It's the system. However ridiculous it may sound, the world communist system or the world communist conspiracy, whether I scare some people or not, I don't give a hoot. If you are not scared by now, nothing can scare you. But you don't have to be paranoid about it. What actually happens now, that unlike myself, you have literally several years to live on unless the United States wake up. The time bomb is ticking. With every second, the disaster is coming closer and closer. Unlike myself, you will have nowhere to defect to. Unless you want to live in Antarctica with penguins. This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Okay, so what do we do? What is your recommendation to the American people?
Well, the immediate thing that comes to my mind is, of course, there must be a very strong national effort to educate people in the spirit of real patriotism, number one. Number two, to explain them the real danger of socialist, communist, whatever, welfare state, big brother government. If people will fail to grasp the impending danger of that development, nothing ever can help the United States. You may kiss goodbye to your freedom, including freedoms to homosexuals, to prison inmate, all this freedom will vanish, evaporate in 5 seconds, including your precious lives. The second thing, the moment at least part of United States population is convinced that the danger is real, they have to force their government. And I'm not talking about sending letters, signing petitions, and all this beautiful, noble activity. I'm talking about forcing United States government to stop aiding communism. Because there is no other problem more burning and urgent than to stop the Soviet military-industrial complex from destroying whatever is left of the free world. And it is very easy to do. No credits, no technology, no money, no political or diplomatic recognition, and of course no such idiocy as grain deals to USSR. The Soviet people, 270 million of Soviets, will be eternally thankful to you if you stop aiding a bunch of murderers who sit now in Kremlin and whom President Reagan respectfully calls government. They do not govern anything, least of all such complexity as the Soviet economy. So basic, two very simple, maybe too simplistic answers or solutions, but nevertheless, they are the only solutions. Educate yourself. Understand what's going on around you. You are not living at a time of peace. You are in a state of war. And you have precious little time to save yourself. You don't have much time, especially if you are talking about young generation. There's not much time left for convulsions to the beautiful disco music. Very soon it will go, just overnight. If we are talking about capitalists or wealthy businessmen, they, I think they are selling the rope on which they will hang very soon. if they don't stop, if they cannot curb their unsettled desire for profit, and if they keep on trading with the monster of the Soviet communism, they are going to hang very soon. And they will pray to be killed, but unfortunately they will be sent to Alaska probably to manage industry of slaves. It's simplistic. I know it sounds unpleasant. I know Americans don't like to listen to things which are unpleasant. But I have defected not to tell you the stories about such idiocy as microfilm James Bond type espionage. This is garbage. You don't need any espionage anymore. I have come to talk about survival. It's a question of survival of this system. You may ask me, what is it in for me? Survival, obviously. Because I am now in your boat. If we sing together, we'll sing beautifully together. There is no other place on this planet to defect to.
We'll be back with Correct Republic. I can keep going if you bring us back in.
I'm on.
Okay. I can add something to that, do you, Tom?
All right, go ahead.
Well, not far from what Yuri was speaking of, there's also a concept that's similar, psychopolitical warfare by Kenneth Goff, G-O-F-F. And it talks about using the pseudosciences of psychiatry, psychology, and so-called mental ill healing. Go ahead.
No.
Did I misstate something?
No, I said I agree with you. I know where you're going with this. I agree.
Well, it's absolutely so. They talk about it of trying to convince Americans that so-called Europeans, which of course is the synagogue of Satan, in their speak, although they would never tell you that, were supposed to convince us that they are qualified with the special qualifications and so-called skills of the psychiatrist, the psychologist, the mental health professional. Mental, of course, means a sick mind. And the people that have these delusions of conclusions and believe in this insanity, because it's all subjective interpretive. There is no bright line test, no measurement, no cure, other than whatever they claim, with being the snake oil salesman that they are and the suicidal psychotropic chemicals that likely will make you have even more symptoms than they claim you had in the first place. Irrespective if they're externally caused due to psyche trauma, which is a real damage form to the thought process in the brain through repeated, extensive, long-term abuse or even horrific, violent, short-term abuse that can cause one to separate their mind, basically create an altered level of consciousness or an alter ego. Some call it multiple personality disorders. But this is a diabolical
fragmented mind
brought in by those Europeans to take over this country from within by having us deem ourselves as too sick and mental to deal with everything, so we'll have to be medicated by these so-called psychiatrists or psychiatrists who will then use their drugs to make us worse off, make us unable to think. And then they can put us into their mental health facilities where they can psycholobotomize us, electrify us, and use it to per se execute their political enemies like they're talking about doing Trump and like they've done tried to do to me and probably tried to do you.
Yeah, but I think that we have a spirit of resistance. And see, that's the real thing here, that I started doing this for that reason, Chris,
because once you unplug yourself and you sit back and you can see it, it's extremely difficult at that point forward for you to become ideologically subverted by their techniques. And that's why they use, for lack of a better term, they use people like us. They come after people like us because we're not going along to get along. We're not part of the hive mind. And we're not part of the collective. Yeah. And that's what makes us so dangerous. Yeah. Free thought is dangerous.
Well, in fact, you'll love this one, Tom, because you're right on cue. Whenever I was sent to the Lakes Crossing Center, the hit woman that was sitting there particularly by the local district attorney, because I had served them the day before with a notice of Title 42, 1983, Bivens Action, RICO, and other crimes, said that I needed to have a dangerousness assessment, not because of what I did, but because of what I know.
Oh, that's perfect. Yep.
I thought you'd like that.
Oh, yeah. To these people, if you have a free-thinking, informed mind, you're crazy. And I can kind of illustrate that a little bit. When they asked me, we were in the pre-sentence thing, whatever it was, with the probation office was there, and it seemed like nice enough people until, she said, well, are you married? Yes. And the lawyer that was in the room said, yeah, he's common law married out of the state of, and I said, hold on a second, I'm not claiming that. I'm not claiming any such common law marriage. If I never told you that I would claim any such label or title for my marriage. And she said, well, what do you mean you're married? And I said, I'm biblically married. I don't seek permission from the state to grant me something that comes from a higher authority in as far as my religious liberty goes. That is between me, my wife, and God. And I made a promise, and I am married. That is a biblical marriage. It's recorded in our Bible, and that's where it will remain recorded. I don't need it recorded in anybody's office. I don't need to claim any special benefit. I don't want a tax gift or rebate or advantage or privilege. It's just that simple. And she said, well, I'm you know, then I saw at the bottom, recommended for psychological evaluation. Okay. When I went up in front of the judge, I said, well, there is no need for, any psychological evaluation. And I told the lawyer who was standing there, I said, this is going to be a problem because I refuse. I'm not going to take a psychological evaluation because I don't agree with the authority of the state in granting me a permission that is something that is covered inside my faith. That is, and I know that we haven't been going by the true meaning of the Constitution for a very long time, but, I stood on that, and, of course, the judge, she waived it, and there you have it. You have to stand up for your rights a little bit at a time. Well, folks, that's going to be all for me for tonight. This is Tom Lackabarra-Stewart. I'm on with Chris Cave. Resurrect the Republic, and look forward to Eric the Freedom Screamer coming at you.
Thank the facility manager for letting you come on this long, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Still in the silence of my room, I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I winter night with you.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.